Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Today we're going to focus on the assessment of anxiety disorders.
Right.
And like a lot of the mental health related conditions that we have talked about and will talk about, the assessment of this is unlike most other medical conditions that you would get evaluations for.
Medical conditions, right. But not mental health conditions.
Right, right, right. Okay. So when it comes to medical conditions, of course, we have blood tests, we have
lab tests,
images. We have neuroimaging, we have
x-rays,
yeah. All kinds of wonderful technologies that will help
us. To chase down most physical ailments.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Some are more difficult, but we have lab tests to catch the others.
Mm-hmm.
So almost anything that you have that kind of specific, measurable,
mm-hmm.
Entity, you know, they fall into the medical categories.
Right.
But
right.
Our world...
It's a little bit different.
...is done differently, is assessed
right.
differently.
Now, when you're starting out with an assessment for anxiety disorders, one of the things to do is to rule out some medical issues.
That's right.
You know,
that's important. I think a lot of people forget that.
Right.
You know, and we're reminded of it when we go in, when you and I started, when we went into these sites about, okay, let's talk about assessment.
Mm-hmm.
We often forget that the first thing you have to do is rule out any medical problems that could be causing the anxiety or be related mm-hmm. to the anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need to rule out some medical issues,
right.
Any heart-related issues, you know, thyroid problems can cause
sure.
anxiety mm-hmm. or depression or lots of other things. You know, certainly there's neurological
right.
issues that can come up on scans,
mm-hmm.
Brain scans and things like that, that mimic symptoms of anxiety disorders, but
that's
it's
right.
not, you know, it's related to something else.
And during the week, we've been talking about the symptoms of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
the various types of anxiety, but that the symptoms are
right.
similar
right.
across the different types of anxieties. And so there are medical conditions that can produce or elicit the same symptoms
mm-hmm.
that we see in anxiety disorder. So this is an easy enough exams to do. So
right.
let's rule out, for example, all the cardiac conditions, all
mm-hmm.
the heart conditions that will make your heart beat faster.
Right.
You know, if you've ever...
And we talked yesterday about how we misinterpret our body
right.
sometimes. So if we're having some tachycardia...
That's right. That's
and so our heart rate is increasing and we're interpreting that as... anxiety.
That's right.
But really, it's some a cardiac issue.
Because it'll make you feel the same.
Right.
You know, if you've ever, and I did have a little bout of that a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
out of nowhere, came out of nowhere and disappeared out of nowhere. But it does. It creates that. I knew what was happening, so
right.
I didn't get frightened. But for a person who had never experienced it before,
mm-hmm.
or people who are living alone, the elderly,
right.
for example, a bout of tachycardia can produce some serious anxiety.
Oh, absolutely.
So there are these physical conditions. So let's rule those out first.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, go see your doctor. Get these exams done because it might be a physical condition.
Absolutely. You also have to rule out other things like medication-induced
right. medication
anxiety.
Induced.
You have to rule out alcohol consumption or other drug use that
mm-hmm.
could elicit caffeine. You know, I have
sure.
And nicotine. I've had patients where they had a smidge, I would
mm-hmm.
say, of anxiety,
right.
but he talked about how every once in a while, man, it would really, you know, several times a day, his anxiety would really increase, but then it would kind of go back to normal, and you know, as we kind of whittle our way through it, we find out that that always happened just after he would dip. You know, he would use
really?
So the
what would it would. Increased arousal, increased symptoms.
Yeah, nicotine has that fascinating dual mechanism
yeah.
Effect of a stimulant and a depressant at the same time. And so, yeah, his stimulant response went
overboard.
And that's the weirdest, that nicotine does that.
Yeah.
You know, you always think of, people talk about nicotine as relaxing, but mm-hmm. it's actually a stimulant as right. well. And it does both.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, when you think about the times people typically smoke, they smoke first thing in the morning to kind of get themselves going mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. And then yeah. at night or, you know, after different relax. Activities to relax. Yeah, so.
After running a 5K.
Yeah. Cigarette. I love the stories of like professional soccer yeah. players and everything, and at halftime they're all in there smoking and everything.
Do they?
Good. Yeah,
professional.
Old one, you know, old school.
Well, the football players used to do
yeah.
that. They
mm-hmm.
would smoke in the locker room, yeah. you know, after the game.
It's fascinating.
So I don't know how they did it, but
now if you rule out all those medical related right. issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you're left with your core symptoms of anxiety, and so mm-hmm. much of that is, of course, a clinical. Right. evaluation that necessitates a diagnostic interview, and so mm-hmm. you're going to talk with the person about what the symptoms they're experiencing, the significance and severity and frequency of the different symptoms, right. and of course as we're getting to more of a diagnostic impression, then we're wanting to talk about when those symptoms are present.
Right, because if you look up the symptoms,
mm-hmm.
there are things like racing heart,
right.
sweats, all the things that you feel that could be related to medical conditions. So,
mm-hmm.
as you said earlier, you have to work your way through that,
mm-hmm.
you know, start
mm-hmm.
ruling things out.
Right.
Because the symptoms, as we say, are similar
mm-hmm.
For many of these medical conditions.
Right. So you now, if we're now at the place where we say, okay, we've ruled out medical issues,
mm-hmm.
we've ruled out hormones, we've ruled out tachycardia and asthma and all those kinds of things that can create symptoms consistent with,
mm-hmm.
Or that at least appear to be consistent with anxiety, right. then we're going to get to our diagnostic tests.
Right.
And our diagnostic tests right now, at best, are going to be like questionnaires.
Exactly. But they serve an extremely valuable
right.
function. And one of the take-home messages here that we want to urge you to do is when we get into the diagnostic test issue, it begins with a self-rating.
Right.
Okay, so it really is the crucial first step.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you do a self-rating, what you're trying to do is you're trying to figure out whether you have the symptoms of anxiety, whether you're really dealing with anxiety
mm-hmm.
or you're simply reacting to something
right.
in your life. Okay,
right.
so the self-ratings that we're going to talk about are designed to do that. That's
right.
the first step.
Right.
Because if it's true anxiety, and that's what you start to conclude, then that's going to take you in one direction. If it's simply a reaction to some life events, you're going to go in a different direction.
Right.
So while the self ratings are in many ways of limited value,
mm-hmm.
they play an important role in this first step.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, what you're kind of referring to is the difference between what we would call state and trait
right.
mm-hmm. symptoms. State symptoms are those symptoms that are present in a particular setting, a very restricted time.
Right.
You know, when, just as an example, I'm fine, I have no anxiety or anything, but you know, as soon as I see a dog running free in the neighborhood,
right.
my anxiety goes through the roof.
Right.
Okay, so mm-hmm. that is a very state-based
or I'm about to get on an airplane.
Right.
Okay. I'm
right.
fine until I get to the airport and
right.
then I start to get a little bit anxious.
Right. 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 Trait anxiety is the presence of a underlying
right.
anxiety that's of course a trait that's always there. It's or most of the time there.
Right. And every time I see a spider,
uh-huh.
every time I see a snake.
Right.
You know, it's not like that snake scared me because it's poisonous.
Right.
It didn't matter.
Right.
I'm always afraid.
Well, and you find that people with trait anxiety tend to be anxious about a lot of different
right.
things.
That's right.
So, yes, they're anxious about spiders and snakes and frogs.
Cockroaches.
And cockroaches. But they're also afraid of, you know, what is the world economy doing, and what is going to happen if you know
we're going to have a terrorist
right,
attack? If
you know,
I go to
they're
travel somewhere.
They're you know, religiously watching the news to see what our terror alert is at. And
what was the
all that?
Several years ago, there was some infection that was
Ebola?
About 2 or 3 years ago.
Ebola,
And they were having trouble. No, it wasn't Zika. It was before Zika. But we had a friend. Mm-hmm. Her son was traveling to some kind of a tournament. And she really wrapped him up with duct tape and everything because he was going to take a flight somewhere. I mean, she had his sleeves with duct tape and his neck. And
oh, so he couldn't get in somewhere.
So the germs couldn't get in or something. You know, she was really convinced that he was going to get this infection if he left town. She had a mask, a surgical mask.
And what's fascinating is when you talk to people, when you would talk to her, you know, when once removed from the situation and her son is back and everything's safe and everything, she could say, I mean,
it's kind of silly. We laughed about it.
But, you know, I was worried.
You
never know. But it's that type of trait anxiety that we're trying to differentiate. Because if it's state, you know, tomorrow we're going to talk about treatment.
Right.
When it's state, that's a very different set of treatment approaches that we take as opposed to a trait.
Yeah, hers is trait because this isn't the only thing that she worries about. I mean, she has worries about quite a number of things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when it comes to some of these self-report skills, of course, you know, the fascinating yet sometimes remarkably challenging thing with doing self-ratings for anxiety disorders is that the person taking the test is typically anxious,
right?
Which means that we have a tendency when we're anxious to over-report. And so a lot of these tests have been designed in such a way to be sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, it's always important to be truthful and honest and all of that. But, you know, if you're going in to take and you're going to fill out a questionnaire, and just before you were walking in the building, there was a spider on the door that raised your anxiety levels. And then you go in to sit down to take this questionnaire. You're going to score it very different than you would if, you know, it was a nice and relaxing, there's nice soft music playing, you know.
Or if you got caught in traffic and you're a little bit late. Okay.
Yeah.
You come in and you're already stressed. A little bit nervous and stressed, and that's going to influence your results.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
It won't influence the X-ray of a broken arm.
Right.
Whether you're but it could influence these test results.
Right. So when we're talking about questionnaires, there's a lot of different questionnaires.
Oh, my gosh.
There's, you know, the Hamilton Anxiety Scale. There's the Beck Anxiety Inventory. There's anxiety inventories strictly for adults, and there's some for teenagers, and there's some for kids. And you know, one of the ones we used to use was the SCARED, SCARED, and that's the Schedule for Children Anxiety Related Disorders, or something like that. And so, it looks at different types of the different questionnaires will look at different things. And so some of them look at just the anxiety symptoms, like the Beck Anxiety Inventory, just looks at anxiety symptoms, doesn't look at where the symptoms come from or what triggers the symptoms, it just looks at the symptoms. Others, you know, look at very specific phobias. Right. Others look at, like, the SCARED looks at separation anxiety versus school anxiety versus, phobias and different things.
In each case, it's what the author feels is important.
Right.
I mean, that's
and they all serve a different purpose.
When we developed our rating scale, that's what we did, is it reflects what we believe is important and worth assessing.
Right. But
there's one down here, this Yale Brown. I think that's a pretty reliable skill. I like that one.
And we'll talk more about this one next week when we talk about OCD. But yeah, the Yale Brown Obsessive Compulsive Scale, the YBOX, it's been around for a long time. We've used it a number of times in some of the research studies that we did back at the university. And yeah, it's pretty well respected, and so it's a good one. And as are a lot of the other ones. Hamilton scales are pretty reliable and pretty
been
respected, and the Beck scales are pretty reliable and respected.
And Reynolds, RCMAS, was one that we tend to rely
on. Reynolds Child Manifest Anxiety Scale.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever if you are going to seek an assessment for anxiety, you may complete any one of these questionnaires. Right. You may do something more comprehensive, sort of what they call an omnibus test, something like the NMPI that looks at a bunch of different things, one of which is anxiety. But it just looks at a sort of a broad sampling of different behaviors and different symptoms from a lot of different domains. So you may get a different experience.
Yeah, these are, you know, they're available online, many of these.
Many of them, you can take them free.
And but it would help your care provider if you have this information. You say, well, I did this rating and this is how it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And a knowledgeable professional can look at that and start to make some diagnostic decisions. So.
And before we wrap up today, the something that's really important to mention is that a result from any of these tests does not equal a diagnosis.
Right.
Some scales, and I'm not going to name any specifically, but some scales use really misleading wording.
Right.
And you, so you have to be careful because sometimes the wording suggests that if you score this, you meet criteria for this disorder. And and you just
be
have to
careful.
Be careful because a diagnosis constitutes a lot more than just the symptoms.
The example I like to use is when I worked in an epilepsy clinic, you can have a seizure or two or three, but not have epilepsy.
Right.
Okay. So just because you have a symptom doesn't mean you have the disorder.
Right.
And it's really true in the case of mental illness, mental health issues, is that you can have any or all of the symptoms. It still doesn't mean that you have a diagnosis.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, again, we've all experienced anxiety at one point or another in our life, but it doesn't mean we have an anxiety disorder.
You know where we ran into that years ago when we had a limited number of instruments to diagnose autism? And there were these rating scales that were just...
very sensitive.
They were the symptoms of the disorder. And so you would get kids who, they had the symptoms and say, well, he's got 8 out of 10 symptoms, so he has the disorder. No.
Right.
He has 8 out of 10 symptoms.
Right.
We don't know that he has the disorder.
We need to keep going through our assessment.
There's another couple steps you have to take. Right.
Yeah. And so the assessment is more comprehensive than just the rating scales. And so it requires an interview and, some questioning and discussion about the symptoms and when they manifest. Because invariably, people come in and I say, do you have any worries? Do you have any anxieties about anything? And they'll invariably they say yes. And I'll say, well, tell me what kind of things you worry about. What kind of things are you stressed about? And they'll say something like, well, I'm worried about my kids' safety. Okay, we all are. I'm worried about,
paying
the bills.
Right.
Yeah, we all have those worries.
Worried about the hurricane season coming up.
Right.
We all are.
So a lot of those are very normal, natural, expected worries. Some people are really anxious. I was going to say anxious about admitting they're anxious. Some people are really hesitant to admit that they're anxious about things, even though anxiety is the natural response to those things.
Right. And an adaptive response.
Right.
What we said early in the week was anxiety motivates.
Right.
Okay. You should be afraid of the hurricane because that will motivate you to make sure everything is in order and that you have your hurricane supply kit ready.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anxiety is also a motivating force, which is a good thing.
Right. Yeah. I've certainly told a fair share of people, if you weren't anxious about this, then I would be worried about you.
That's right. If you're not... talk about soldiers, the soldier who's not afraid,
Right.
You're not afraid?
What's up with that guy?
Something wrong. Right. So there's another end of this continuum.
Right.
But what we're looking for in these assessments is, do you have the symptoms? But that doesn't mean you have the disorder.
Right.
And what we'll talk about tomorrow in our next podcast, what do you do about it?
Right.
Okay, so you have the symptoms. Then the next thing you have to do is move to, do you have the disorder?
Right.
And if you do, what do you do about it? So we'll move on that tomorrow.
Exactly. All week we've been working to remind you spread the word about the Coming Out of the Darkness, a Concert of Hope event that will be at Theater Winter Haven on May 24th at 7:30 p.m. If you're interested in finding out more information, contact Winter Haven, Theater Winter Haven, and it's at theaterwinterhaven.com, and it's theatre, winterhaven.com. And it looks like a great event that's going to benefit. All the proceeds are going to be going to a community mental health agency as well as the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and it's all about suicide prevention awareness. The program looks fantastic. It's going to be really a good evening.
Worth doing.
Yeah.
Beginning of your Memorial Day weekend.
Yep. So if you're around, check it out. It'll be
join us in Winter Haven.
Yep. So, all right. That is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We'd be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.